what's really holding you back from marketing, marketing plan, implementation? What are the things that come up each and every time? I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do that. I can't do that. Asking for help is hard. I don't have the time or talent. It won't work. Does any of this sound familiar? So step one is think about what is the thing that's most holding you back when you think about your headspace, your mindset around marketing. If I said, Ethan, Nathan, Nick, you're all going to triple in the next 3 years, just randomly, just because, what's the first thing that your brain goes to?
It should be, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think for me personally, it's just time. So in the midst of running Surge, managing the existing book, trying to figure all these new systems and processes out, it's just how are we going to get it all done? Which gets back to prioritization and making sure you're working on the next needle mover.
Yeah, and you're going to remember, we're going to talk about this as we go through. You make decisions about how to use your time for next year now. Right? Like we've already done our time model for next year, right? Adam's blocked out his calendar. Your vision is, hey, if I'm going to spend 20% of my time on marketing or 40% of my time, if you're newer and have more time, how does that actually show up in your calendar? If it doesn't show up in your calendar, it's a wish. It's not a commitment. And so when we don't know, and that's what we're talking about, marketing plan implementation. Some of you will block out an hour a day or a couple hours a few days a week. Others of you will super batch activities. So those are the things that you ultimately want to figure out so that you can manage your time around it. And then our goal is to shift from very much like we were talking earlier, Adam brought up the mindset, right? If it's been done before, it has been done again. Are there any billion-dollar firms out there? Yes, there are. Are there lots of lifestyle practices, ours and right, Limitless and others that are doing a million or a million and a half or $1.8 million a year with one or two people happily? Yes, there are. Which means what? It means absolutely positively it can be done again. It doesn't mean you have to do it. It just means whatever you can imagine in this space for the most part has been created. And then it's your, right? How do you take the path to get there? I have the tools I need. It has to get done to get better, right? Things like it's not about, it's who, not how. So these are the shifts that you, to Adam's point, what are the things that pop into your head and can we be aware of them? Because if we're not aware of them, then they're in the driver's seat and we're in the sidecar. If we're aware of them, we can politely ask them to get out of the driver's seat and into the sidecar because we have to take that next best step. And that's the momentum, the flywheel that you've heard Adam talking about a lot, is just putting one foot in front of the other and over and over to get that flywheel turning.
Well, and this is on that note of the flywheel. This is one of the things that I took from that book, which is again, a monograph to Jim Collins' work that he did in Good to Great, was if you look at a company like Amazon, their flywheel that they've defined that their strategic and high level leadership has come up with is 5 bullet points. And this is the first example that they talk about in flywheel, which I believe the first start of the flywheel is compete on low prices. And then that begets something else, which begets something else, which begets something else, which begets something else. But it comes back to compete on low price, which is then drives member engagement, et cetera, et cetera. But the point here is the biggest mistake that we see advisors make is, and again, we're maybe complicit in this sometimes, we have all these great ideas and we can all go to all these different success stories out there. And advisors love that, for lack of a better word, they love that success porn. They love just soaking all that in. And the consequence of that is it can be very easy for advisors to think that I got to do this and 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 I got, and you pick all of those things. But the interesting thing is, case in point from my example, I just went all in on the podcast. One thing. I was already writing for Review Optometric Business, which to Angela's question in Slido, we'll talk about, can you have more than one marketing funnel? The short answer is yes, as long as they're all driving towards a common trigger, towards a common success or a common goal. But I went all in on the podcast. And because of going all in on one thing, it then opened up other doors that still drove back to that one thing. So make sure that your eyes aren't bigger than your stomach. You only have to pick one, maybe two things. Do them really, really well and compound that success to see results that we're talking about here. Because I think as the next, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, does everybody remember from retreat what the secret to marketing success is to this point? On the back of the shampoo bottle.
Consistency.
Right? Apply a small dose.
Wash, rinse, repeat.
Lather, rinse, repeat. Yeah. Right? It does not say put half the bottle in your hand. Sub yourself from top to bottom. Right? No. Right? It's what are the small doses that you can consistently apply? And when you can build on that, so again, right, Adam still got referrals. He still got some COI stuff, but he focused his intentional energy in driving growth in a way, and in a way that would build over time. Some of you will want to do more immediate things. Some of you will do a hybrid strategy. You'll do, right, some of those nearer term things, and then you'll do some of those things that take over time. Elliot, that's very funny. Elliot joked that he hasn't seen the bottle in a lot of years. It's pretty funny. I didn't think about that, Elliot. See, perspective is everything.
All right. So then we'll use body wash.
Because body wash.
I hope you've seen a bottle of body wash.
Yes, that's right. We hope. Or a bar of soap. That's right.
Yeah.
So here are the tools. So remember, all of the change models that we create here at Limitless, really any change model that will work, is going to be based on clarity, transparency, and accountability. Have any of you ever read a positive parenting book? Guess what it's based on? They won't use these words. This is my, right? My words, but it's about clarity. What is the expectation? We have an understanding. It's about transparency. How do we have line of sight to what's happening so that we can deal with that? How do we have accountability so that everybody knows what the expectations, consequences, positive or negative, are? When you put those three things together, you get a plan that works, because you are consistently, not because documents are helpful. Again, you can do it on a cocktail napkin. It's just keeping yourself on track, is because the momentum is building and the flywheel is building, and you're developing the habit of marketing, the habit of thinking about your marketing, the habit of evaluating your marketing, the habit of pivoting your marketing, right? Manage. So you're going through that process over and over in a way that surfaces what's working. Let's do more of that. What's not? Hey, this isn't really working. We need to evaluate it. Are we missing something? Have we given it enough time? Do we need to double down? Do we need to pull back? And so you want to have a marketing process that is a bit more than showing up and cowboying it, which means we get up in the morning and we go, ooh, what should I do today? Right? Or that's reactive. Hey, someone invited me to go somewhere, is very different than deciding, hey, I want to do, you know, I want to try and get a speaking engagement in once a quarter to get my brand into the marketplace with my audience. So these are the tools that you'll use. So we just wanted to spend a little bit of time familiarizing with them, because there's a few of them that you can implement. And again, go back to slide prior to this one. Your eyes don't have to be bigger than your stomach. It's about what's going to work for you. So you can do a deep marketing plan with lots of opportunity documents and schedules. You can use the success shifter. That's literally how I started marketing in the prior. I literally had, right, RPAs each day. I was going to do three. That's where three a day came up with for Tiffany. That's what I did, and it worked, right? Get the flywheel going. I tracked all my prospects, number of call, interest calls, number of leads. You know, if we'd had a website back in the day, it would have been on there. I tracked, right, COI touches, client, like, did I spend 2 hours working on, right, our content? We actually had to print content back then. We didn't have the internet the way we do now, but we did all the same stuff. We just had different forms of it. So what are the activities that are going to hold you accountable to that time? Do you need to update your calendar? You need to put it in your schedule. Use the success shifter, your CRM, your right hand. What are those systems that you're going to put in place? That's what the transparency piece is. And that's what creates the insights so that you can make the changes that you need to make sure that you can be accountable on the other side. So it's your playbook, your business plan, your success shifter. You can use the one-page marketing plan. Keep it simple. Your success shifter, if you want to keep it even simpler still, the practice benchmark tool, if you want to manage, what, monitor and manage that performance over time. If you're a smaller or newer advisor, you don't need to go deep into the practice benchmark. If you're a larger firm, you have multiple advisors or lots of clients, you should ultimately, I think when we were talking in the opening, and we were talking about questions about like when things really kick in, you can really think of Limitless as like layers. And next year you'll see the tracks, really the climbs, if you will, broken up into beginner climbs. and advanced climbs. If you're just starting out, you don't go deep into three level tiers of digital, like 12 months of service model, right? You start with a standard level. If you're newer and starting, you don't need a 90-page marketing plan. You need a one-page marketing plan, and you need time on your calendar every day and week to go do that marketing stuff, whatever it may be. So the idea here is to build in layers, but use the tools that are available. If you have questions about that, feel free to ask us. But that is a perfect segue. As you familiarize yourself with the tools, right? It's the sample model, marketing meeting agendas. If it's you and yourself, you don't have to have a marketing meeting agenda unless you need a marketing meeting agenda to keep you on track, right? I had a marketing meeting agenda with me and my principal because I needed to make sure that we talked about these five bullet points every single meeting, right? How many clients were in the pipeline? What were our strategic opportunities, right? Were we close? Like, what were the things we needed to talk about? So again, use the tools that really work for you, but be sure to go through and familiarize yourself with them. Start with either the success shifter or the one-page marketing plan as your core piece, and then use the other pieces as it really supports you and your process wherever you are. Which is a really nice, this is really
encapsulated. I was gonna say, we've already been here, right?
This is what we've been talking about.
Marketing. Well, and this is, and I'm kind of talking about this a little bit in chat with Michelle. So I apologize for distracting too much from what we're talking about here. I know, like, there is no such thing as multitasking. There's just how good is your ability to rapidly refocus. So I apologize if I'm testing everybody's ability to rapidly refocus from what I'm typing and what Steph is saying. So I'll condense it down and talk about it from here, from this point. So the question was the podcast. And for those of you that aren't in for my podcast for 2020 Money. So the Cliff's Notes of that launched in 2018, rebranded 2020 Money in April of 2019. First prospect came in, I believe it was June. So a couple months later. The narrower your niche target audience is, the faster, and it could be podcasting, could be video, could be blogging, could be guest writing, speaking, it doesn't matter. The narrower your audience, the easier and the quicker that momentum can build. The way in which you can grow audiences, it is an entire conversation in and of itself. So I'm going to spare us to make sure that we get through everything here. But the idea, the philosophy, two philosophies that I'll leave you or that I'll kind of talk about here as it relates to what I did to implement marketing momentum and how you can think about taking that through your own filter. So two themes that were important to me were, where do I find golden geese instead of golden eggs? And how can I cross-pollinate what I have with what someone already has? Both of them are related. So the golden geese versus golden eggs, I didn't want to have to try and market to every single different optometry practice that was around the country or even in the state of Indiana. Rather, what sandbox are they already playing in? What audience already has their attention? Who already has their eyeballs? Who already has their ears? Who already has their time? How can I go nurture that relationship, which is why I've been writing for Reviewed Optometric Business since 2016, and why the podcast, I would look for guests that were already serving the optometry space and have them on and then give them permission to say, hey, as we talk or as this podcast becomes live, I'll share it with you. Feel free to share it with your audience. If it drives brand awareness, we'll share it with our newsletter, right? And that is the cross-pollination, the cross-promoting. So this rising tide lifts all ship. I wanted the platform to help further their brand, which indirectly was going to give my podcast exposure to people that had never heard me before or never heard the podcast before. And so there's a direct correlation that we've tracked in our downloads. Whenever I'm a new guest on someone else's podcast, or whenever I have a new guest on my podcast that has a decent name in the optometry space, we automatically see an uptick in our subscribers and our downloads. So those are some, so take what I've done. So run that. This is the rhetorical kind of question or the critical thinking part of this as you take it through your filter of, all right, this is what Adam did in his situation. What am I doing back to the message or back to the previous slide when we talk about, okay, here's the action items, here's the plan, here's how I can execute on that. How can you take that through the filter of what you're doing to try and build brand awareness?
What you'll notice is success leaves clues. There's models. So whether it's a podcast, a blog, speaking and writing, centers of influence, referrals, what you're going to find is you're building that momentum. It can really take 12 to 36 months to see a return on investment. And what I want you to be clear on, that doesn't mean that you're not getting any clients along the way, but the amount of time that Adam invested, right? The amount of time that, that we're working on the white papers and the blogs and the speaking presentations and the webinars or the social, whatever you're doing, developing that content, is it's about getting the overall return on time in terms of getting the flywheel going. Adam shifted the podcast to a narrower niche, and in 2 months he had his first prospect, right? And then what he'll tell you is that momentum, the pace picks up, then it was another one, and then it was two together, and then it was four, and then it was eight, and right, that we could plot over time, I'm sure, the data to see what that trajectory looks like. But it's usually a 12 to 36 runway to get the flywheel fully working. And it's also a little bit different for each of those lead gen strategies, depending on your audience base. If you do a webinar and you don't have an audience, you're not going to have a lot of near-term revenue. But if you do a webinar and you have an audience, right, and you layer in a webinar or a podcast, you can shift that strategy to actually use that as a way to generate more leads. So I was talking with another consultant in our space this morning, and they have something similar to our platform, but different. And it's basically, you know, they charge this low fee, but it's people come in there and ultimately surface up and become clients. And so that's what a podcast, a blog, speaking engagements are, is you're basically building that trust equity with people so they know your story, so you're never selling it. When they're ready, they just go, hey, Adam, I've been following you for 18 months, or hey, Josh, I've been reading your blog, or and then I attended your webinar. So there's that long-term nurture, which you're going to hear us talk about. And then there's what's the near-term that you're doing to generate revenue, and or if you're larger and creating shifts, what are you doing to create those shifts that are ultimately going to scale your revenue? Right. Do you guys hear all that pounding in the background, or is my microphone working incredibly well today? Awesome. My microphone.
I think you're good.
Excellent. That's what I love to hear. I just have to pretend like they're not sawing and like hammering downstairs and it's not reverberating through my entire house. Really? So I'm like, yeah, everything's fine over here. Marketing and momentum. I know that we think it's all about drive and personality and charisma, and that certainly doesn't hurt, but marketing is always, when you look down, when you look at marketing machines, pipelines that are consistent and steady, there's always a process. There's always a system behind them. So marketing is about your momentum and process. So one, make sure you've got your accountability form. Things you want to keep in mind, turn big strategies into small tasks. This is not about how I'm going to go do 50 things or how I'm going to do it all at once. It is what's the lane or lanes that I'm going to swim in. And as you heard, I think it was, we were talking, one of you was mentioning, or like, as we broke down those examples, like once it gets clear, you can start to put it into place. But what are the big priorities? And then how do you break those into tasks? Starting a podcast or becoming a speaker in your niche isn't like a flip that you switch on Monday and it happens on Tuesday. It's 1,000 switches lined on 1,000 walls, and you have to show up every day and flip a switch. You can miss a day here or there, but that's how I want you to think about it, is it's a long runway lined with switches, and it's not like one big pop and you're like, I'm so successful. Can you show up every day, flip a switch, flip a switch? Might be 2 days a week, right? But the habit for all of you is to really get into consistent marketing. To tag your team, if you've got one, right? Adam uses Kathy. He's got the podcast team. He's got different teams in place to support him as he goes along. Three, use a real budget. That does not mean spend more money than you have or throw vast dollars at marketing, believing that throwing it out there will make it come back to you. It won't. You want to make calculated investments. There's always a risk, but you want to have a real budget, time and capital. Am I going to invest $5,000 in marketing? Am I going to invest 2 hours a week, 10 hours a week, 1 day a month? What's that going to look like? Because that's the container that you have to put things in to make sure that your marketing is working. You're going to leverage technology. You're going to hear Adam has talked about, like, now we're building into the marketing, right? Into the onboarding, into the sales process. How are we using it with COIs? We talked a lot about some of the cool things that advisors and Limitless are doing and our partners are doing at Retreat. There is so much you can do with technology now to show up at that personal level in still a scaled and systematic way. You used to have to show up at a personal level to show up and build trust equity. Now you can put your dang face in a video, deliver it every week, and people will walk up to you like they've known you for years and be like, here, take my money. It's, I love you, Angela. You're the best thing ever. I totally trust you. I've been listening to you for, or reading you or hearing about you from my friends. How are you building trust equity? And we can use technology to really do that in ways that we, that were much more difficult 10 and 15 years ago. Accountability, we talk a lot about, so I'm not going to hit you with the hammer on that, but that's all of the systems and the processes to make sure you're showing up and doing the work. Knowing your pipeline, Adam can tell you about, you hear him like, I got this data, I've got that data, right? It's knowing where are they coming from? How are you generating them? What are your conversion numbers? How's the website working? Like really know that, and then track and monitor your success. Is your conversion rate increasing, right? Can you see incremental progress, or are you just waiting for the big swing to show up in your revenue report? So are our leads going up? Are our interests going up? Is our conversion going up? Are the number of people on our website going up? Are our referrals going up? Are they going down? Because that's the data point, like the dashboard on the card that tells you the temperature gauge is hot or cold. Edwin, you got to show up today and you got to try and get that thing back into the green. Like, let's pay attention. Is it our time? Is it our investment of capital? Is it our strategy? Are we not paying it? Like, what do we need to do to make sure the momentum is there consistently? Because if you do that, if you work the plan with marketing, what we know is it will, if you work the plan will work. It's the gears in that plan, Adam will tell you, like, you're going to constantly be tweaking those. No matter what you do, you're not going to throw it on the wall and be like, great plan. My work here is done. I just have to wait for the prospects to show up. Does it work that way, Adam?
No, it doesn't. Well, and this goes back to Doug's question, and I'll touch on it right now briefly, and maybe we can save it. There's more to it. We can add to it either now or towards the end, but I figured we're talking about it, so let me address it briefly. So Doug's question in Slido, if it doesn't work right away, how long do I stick with it? Like an NFL coach, do I go back to that play? So a couple things that I would point out to that briefly here, which kind of in turn feeds into this slide here, talking about, you know, these big ideas and strategies, but then breaking them down into small tasks. So the first thing that we all have to understand is that nothing that any of us are going to think about doing from a marketing standpoint hasn't been done by someone already. I would be hard pressed to find someone on this call that is doing something truly that no one has ever done before. And so the first step in research, as you're thinking about what is your benchmark and what is your baseline, is to find other people to the extent that you want to know what that goalpost is right now, to continue with that metaphor. Find out what other people have done and benchmark the playbook off of what they have done to be successful. So there's your null knot from a scientific point of view. You can have that benchmark to see what they used as their benchmark. And there's no shortage of information out there where you can use that. We have some examples here in Limitless. There are other advisors outside of Limitless that with a couple of Google searches, you can probably Google or LinkedIn searches, you can probably get to them. So that's the first step. The second step is to truly understand, what are you measuring? What, how, if it doesn't work right away? Well, Steph alluded to this earlier in a previous slide. If what doesn't work? Website conversions, prospects, clients, phone calls, downloads of white paper, right? First of all, let's make sure that we're defining what success means and what it is that we're measuring, and then and make sure that what we're talking about as success is the same as the person that we're researching, is the previous person or the previous firm that has done this example. For example, we did part of the way in which our eBooks are set up, while it's not nearly as robust as what he did, is based off Ted Jenkins, who sold it, Oxygen Financial down in Franklin, Tennessee. And so I saw what Ted was doing, had a conversation with him. This was years ago. And like, I think that's a pretty good idea. Got some information from him. Now, again, I haven't built out near to the extent that he has, but the point here is find other people that have done that before and find out what timeline, like Seth said it previously, 12 to 24 months, and make sure that you're consistently measuring data points throughout that, that you're able to trend that data. How do you do that, right? We talk about right here, the broad strategy that we're talking about. Okay, I'm going to set up a podcast. Great. How many episodes am I going to release? What does that look like? Who's the team that I need to surround myself with? And then this is where, again, from a practicality standpoint, everything that we do on the business is in Asana. And that tool has been great for us to use from a firm standpoint, because it allows me to bring in third parties to help manage the marketing content calendar, to help manage the podcast, to help manage the ghostwriting, to help manage as a VA standpoint. All of that is built into Asana. And that's how we break all of that into the specific tasks of who's doing what, when it needs to get done, and for which project, which is all based off of David Allen's Getting Things Done GTD system, which, well, I've got to just Google GTD workflow. That is how everything in that's in David's system works. But again, I digress.
Yeah,
two good systems to use that play into one another.
Yeah, and it's really about what's the system that you're going to use to build a model for how you manage your marketing in terms of those, that time, capital, and staff, which we'll talk about in a minute. Angela had a question in Slido, which got upvoted, which was, what's the amount of time that advisors, or in this case, top advisors, spend on marketing? The last study was around average advisor spends around 10% of their time on marketing. Top advisors spend about 30%. I want to say that Michael at some point said his study showed it maybe even closer to 40%. But again, it's going to very much depend on the life cycle you're in and the kind of marketing that you're doing. So that's where we're really waiting for the research to pair out a little bit better. If you're Adam and you're doing a podcast, if you weren't doing the flying to, you know, do all the events and stuff, his marketing would be significantly less than that. So it'd be very scalable. But if you were seeing COIs twice a week, right, conceivably, it could be a lot more with that and the follow-up. So on average, you should be looking at spending about, think about a third of your time. The exercise here that we will really all do, and we'll do this again, we're making some cool additions to the time lessons for next year in terms of how you guys apply them. But imagine that you just had, right, a pie chart with 100% of your time, and you had to allocate like how much. So that's how I look at my time. It's how Michael looks at his time. It's how Adam looks at his, which is, hey, I want to spend 20% of my time, right, in this lane. I want to spend 20% of my time on marketing. I want to spend 20% of my time on, right, special Steffi projects, right? I want to spend 20. And so when I look at that, it's like, okay, I've got 20% of my time to market. Based on how I want to spend my time, all right, what's the best marketing that we can do? What's going to be the most effective? How, and limitless, right? Even all the stuff that you've seen us use, a lot of the things that we teach you, and they work incredibly well. We're going through the same process of, hey, as we set the vision for the next level, what's the growth strategy? What are the channels, right? We're going to start a pod, like, we're going to start applying all of that, right, at the level, at the next level of scale, because that's what we're growing into. And so we have to go back to everything and re-engineer it again. And so that's the evolution that you'll ultimately go through. So step one is to really figure out, what are those strategies? What are the lanes, right? Choosing the channels that you're going to operate in. And then how do you turn those broad strategies? Do a podcast, do a blog, work on centers of influence. And how do you turn them into specific tasks? So again, use that marketing plan, the project forms, the marketing task tracking forms, the metrics and the measures, whether it's Success Shifter, practice benchmarks, you've got your internal marketing data that you want to be tracking. So how do we turn those into steps that we can take? You hear us talk a lot about this, right? Which is, how do you use your team? How many of you have at least one person that you can, that supports you in some way, shape, or form? Is that most of you? I think some of you do not, but I think a good, right? And so it becomes a question of, how are you using the team? So Adam, how are you using the team to really, right, create the support structures under the, right, the highway of your pipeline, if you will?
So it's still, again, giving, I'm not smart enough to come up with the stuff on my own, Jim Collins hedgehog concept. Which Jim, because I'm going to get it right and give attribution there. Jim Collins' hedgehog concept is a Venn diagram, the intersection of three circles. What am I deeply passionate about? What am I the best in the world at doing? And what drives the economic resource engine in my business? And so for me, the intersection of that, the podcast has been the central part of that. And so I only want to focus my time on what my, as Dan Sullivan talks about, what is my unique ability, which is being a really good interviewer, asking really good questions, being good on the mic and having those conversations. Everything else, as I strip down and document, again, who needs to do what, when does it need to get done, and for which project, every step, either upriver or down, up or downstream from that, now the question is, who can I surround myself with to do that, instead of how do I do that? The side note to doing that, and I think this is really important for anybody to realize if you're in the content creation business, right? We love our alliteration here. The thing to write down with content creation, consistency is key. One of the ancillary benefits of thinking about it through this filter is it is a built-in sense of force. It is a built-in forcing mechanism, dare I say, not extreme accountability, because let's face it, the person that you hire isn't going to be in extreme accountability. But to the extent that you don't want to disappoint someone that's waiting for a project, I can say with 100% certainty, there is no way that I would have been able to produce whatever we're on, 210 episodes of 2020 Money, if it wasn't for my producer, who's responsible for doing the editing, the posting, et cetera, you know, figuratively or literally poking me and like, hey, so what are we releasing for Monday? Because it can be really easy to kind of, oh, I got really busy. I didn't manage my time accordingly this week. I'll get to it next week. So think of as you're tagging your team in here, that is an ancillary benefit that I found to be really, really beneficial. That candidly, I didn't give it the full credit that it was worth in the very beginning. Like that's not why I hired out in the beginning, but it turned out to be a pretty darn good forcing mechanism.
Yeah. Well, and again, it could be as simple as, right, your service person or your manager managing your speaking engagements or making sure that your blog schedule is planned out. It could be as simple as, for those of you that are doing client contacts or center of influence touches, here's a list of the clients that I want to be engaged with, right? Put two clients on my calendar a day during the time that's been blocked out, all right? Or find 3 hours for me to just do these calls once a week. Please go forth and make that happen. Hey, here's a list of 50 centers of influence that I want to check in with, that I want to have at least one lunch or breakfast meeting with a year. Here are the times that I've blocked out each week. Please, right, start doing outreaches. Here's the email that we've drafted, send it out, and please follow up to make sure that I'm sitting across from someone at least once a week. If this person is good, go to the next person on the list, right? Your job is just to make sure that I'm having that conversation with someone. So there's a lot of different ways with your internal staff and your team to create that leverage, right? Which is like a person-driven system. And we'll talk about technology in a minute. And then outside partners is Adam. Uses a lot because he's got, right, two people on his team and they both have full-time jobs. So they're not, they're not going to spend hours on those things, right? And so that's where he's built an external team that supports him, right? And your external team will depend on whether you're doing podcasts or blogs. It might be writers. It might be designers. It might be people who book you for speaking engagements or podcasts. It might be, right, LinkedIn partners who are, right, building out that channel for you. So there's a lot of opportunities to, right, define your team. So just keep an open mind as you think about that and allocate, to Adam's point, how you're going to use your time. Here we love to talk about energy creating revenue producing activities. That's when you're going to be growing and that's when you're going to be happy. If you can build a reasonable business on the back end, that's what's going to make you profitable. So if you do not enjoy it, then or you don't know how to do it, then your job is to find the people who can. One of my early mentors said to me in one of the law firms I worked in, he said, Stephanie, to be successful, you do not have to know all the answers. He said, but you just have to be smart enough to surround yourself with the people who do. I would add, you have to be humble enough. I'm really good at being like, I do not know how to do that, but that sounds great. Let's hire someone to teach us. And then we'll get really, really good at it. And so I want you to just take a moment and pause. What's one place that you're doing something in your marketing that you could either delegate to an internal person or to an external person, and you simply haven't because you haven't had the clarity or you've been in habit or you've been hesitant? Can you think of something? Right. Now, what action would you take around that? If you really genuinely believe that leveraging your time so that you were doing energy creating revenue producing activities was one of, if not the fastest way to grow, what would you change? What will you do differently starting today? Will you set a goal to get to a certain number of new clients, assets, or revenue so that you can make that investment in internal or external partners? Will you find one place that you can, right, make that investment now? If you're a larger firm, is there a way that you can really look at your budget and your strategy and evaluate what's the best use of time, energy, and capital here, given that we're past rent and ramen and we can make investments, but can we make really smart ones that we feel good about? Is why we hesitate to make investments, certainly when it comes to investing in teams and partners, is we want to make sure that we're going to get that ROI. So this is a great segue into your budget. We don't have to have a deep conversation here, but again, your budget should be time in your calendar. That is the number one budget item that will have an impact. When you know what you're doing, or you have a partner that knows what they're doing, then you can trade time for money. It's great leverage, by the way. But you either have to have a partner that can do it, or you have to learn how to do it, and then right, find the person or the partner that you can delegate it off to. So there's building, right, as we talked about, and there's prospecting, and you want to ask yourself where you want to spend your time. So make sure your cash flow and your capital investments also account for marketing. Adam, I don't know if you ever did this. I don't think you ever did, but I can't tell you, at least twice a year, I get the phone call that says, hey, I have the opportunity to, it's usually pay $5,000 to be in a magazine and get the 5-star award or something like that. But it's usually someone has called and said, hey, you can buy this from me. You can join this service. You can do this thing. And what would you like to do? And invariably, I get the phone call, and the phone call is, should I do it? And I say, that is not even the conversation we should start with. The conversation we should start with, back the truck up, is, hey, so what you're saying to me, if I hear you right, is that you're willing to invest $5,000 in marketing if you think that there's a reasonable probability of success. Obviously, I made the phone call. Okay, great. Then the question that we would be better served to ask ourselves is, what's the best way to spend $5,000 to drive growth in this business? I was like, could be the ad, could be this opportunity, could be something else entirely. But let's look at our strategy. Let's look at the clients we're trying to attract. Let's look at what's working and what's not. And then let's ask ourselves, what's the best way to take a calculated risk with $5,000? And 90% of the time, do you know what it's not? 98% of the time, it's not the thing that they called about. Because the thing that they called about landed, we love to say that in coaching, right? It landed because it hit a need that Barbara, that need is, I want more clients. I want more revenue. It's going to solve my problems. Hey, someone just offered me the magic pill to fill my need. Can I take it? I don't know. Is that the pill we need for the sickness that we have? So that's where asking ourselves, how has my marketing worked? Not through the lens of I'm getting the results that I want. How has my marketing worked through the lens of these 9 lessons that we're taking you through? Do you have clarity and, are you eating the elephant one bite at a time? Do you have that clarity? Are you leveraging the team? Are you creating a realistic budget of time, energy, and capital and really making that a commitment and investment? Or are you kind of just showing up every other day swinging at the fence? Again, like, we all get it, but this is the honest conversation about, if the budget is I'll show up and wing it, that's entirely different than this is the commitment that I'm, the investment I'm committing to, because I know that's how I'm going to get to the ROI. So that's just my little inspirational speech about really committing time, energy, and capital in intentional ways, which is why having a plan and a strategy, right? What are the channels, right? Who are we going to focus on? How are we going to do it? And then that gets to, now how do we make better use of our time? Adam, I feel like you got to cover the tech slide.
Yep.
It's like your jam, man.
Yeah. Yeah, this is where, again, I'm just quoting all the different like nuggets of wisdom that I've gleaned from reading over the years. But and I've said this before on Limitless, so forgive the redundancy, but I think it's important to repeat. Tim Ferriss is one of my favorite quotes, and I've got a lot of them from 4-Hour Workweek, which is never delegate something that you can automate, and never automate something you should eliminate. And so from an automation standpoint, this is where the lower right-hand corner is the automation system that we have set up for our workflow business. I mean, when someone buys our workflows, I mean, whether it's they're buying the workflows or the marketing that comes with someone getting onto our list and wanting more information, all of that has been automated through, this is Infusionsoft. You can use ConvertKit, you can use ActiveCampaign. There's a lot of different options out there. I would candidly recommend ConvertKit. It's a fairly easy and shallow learning curve. Not very complicated. And a lot of advisors use it with really good success. The set tasks with due dates, I think the most important part in that second set there, where we have set tasks with due dates. And you've heard me say this on a calls as well. It's one thing to leave these calls with notes written down. It's another to ensure that somewhere they are on your calendar to review and or to take action on. So to see, where it says meet with new COIs one time per month. That's not an action item. That's a wish. Is it on your calendar? And how are you going to execute on that? Again, I go back to who's doing what, when does it need to get done, and for which project? So having these on here is one thing. Ensuring that they have time, back to the previous slide, where we actually had the model week or a model calendar, to ensure that you have to have these action items somehow end up on your calendar. Because having an Asana board is great, but if it's not on something that you're actually working, whether you have time devoted to that or not, you have to just make sure that whatever system that you're using is staring at you in the face, and that is what you're working off of. Again, workflows control the flow of work. Any one of these systems helps you either do that or automate that in the form of ActiveCampaign, ConvertKit. Don't use Infusionsoft. Like I said, I know enough about Infusionsoft. Like, no advisor on here needs Infusionsoft. I will promise you, no advisor here, no advisor on this call needs Infusionsoft, Marketo, HubSpot. Like, stay away from all, please do not go down that rabbit hole. The reason that we use Infusionsoft, different reason, it's our point of sale, it's everything, it integrates with Redtail, blah, with our market. Don't use it. You don't need that. I just, full disclaimer, I don't want someone coming back and saying, Adam talked Infusionsoft, and now I'm, don't use Infusionsoft.
I believe that we got it. So a couple of highlights here. One, that first part, those project management tools, it can be, and we love Asana, we all use it here, Adam uses it, but if you don't have that and you're starting out, like I used to use a spreadsheet, right? Before that, I used the Success Shifter. I would absolutely recommend something like an Asana or a Trello, again, because there's just so much built in. Now they're doing workflows, you can tag, you can do reports. Like, it's really cool what those capabilities are, and they do things that the CRMs just don't do at a project level, right? Relative to the client relationship. Adam's point, that marketing plan that you build out has to get translated into the system. So if it doesn't get translated into the calendar, it can't happen. Are you guys ready? My team loves this. If it's not on the calendar, it can't happen. If it's not in the system, it doesn't exist, are the rules that we use here, right? And are continually building too, which is you can't. So it's how do you, going back to that second step, how do you break it down into pieces? How do you use your team and your time budget to then leverage the technology so that you put it in and it does the work? Both, this is right, clarity and transparency piece. Marketing workflows is really about the external place. How can you leverage technology going to that brand storytelling and prospecting? You can use it to do a lot of the work for you, right? Drip when people, right, come to the website, you can drip on them in a video campaign or a podcast campaign. So there's just a lot of ways that you can leverage tech. One, internally to manage your marketing, and second, externally to really drive more scale and time in your marketing without you having to show up, right, day by day. And I think we've hit on this in a number of ways. It's just, how are you going to create accountability? So we have some tools. There's a new business summary report. If you don't have that coming out of your CRM right now, or any of your systems, but most of you, I think all of them do at this point. But the goal is, whether it's a success shifter, the business summary, or your internal firm reporting or your CRM reporting, is to make sure that, as we've talked about, to track and manage that data, because plans fail because it's not clear who's responsible, people aren't accountable. And so we've got to make sure that we have the data, the tasks, and the track for everybody to run on to make sure we implement that accountability. Who is the first and most important person we have to hold accountable in our marketing? Everybody, just find a mirror, hold it right up, and be like, that would be me, right? Because if we're not driving the car when it comes to marketing, it's going to swerve all over the road, right? People are going to be reaching over. It's just going to hit a ditch and sit there until we get out and figure out how to back this thing up and get it back on the road. And so really sit in a space of asking yourselves at this moment, how accountable have I been for growth? So I say I want to grow. Have I been doing activity? Have I been really aware of and accountable for those activities? Have I been using the tools and resources available to me? Or have I been, right, showing up inconsistently? Have I been just taking swings and reacting as opportunities come up? So this is where we want you to be really clear and intentional so that you have the ability to know what you're being accountable to. Pipeline combo. I think there were a couple questions around, I think there was a question around pipeline, but I also saw Angela, just going back to budget on Slido, and I want to make sure I don't forget to answer it, around the amount of budget, dollar-wise, that most people spend on marketing. Average is about 3 to 4%. And again, that depends on, right, the size of your firm. If you're just starting out, right, your time budget might need to be bigger, or you might want to invest a bit more if you've got the ability to do that. If you're a larger firm, right, you don't necessarily have to go spend $30,000 or $60,000 straight out of the gate, but it also does not mean that you won't or that you shouldn't and that you wouldn't get a return on investment. So 3 to 4% is the average. Again, Adam, do you know what your current spend is as a percentage?
Well, what I was just going to say, and this, the short answer is a lot. If I do the quick math on this, it's a little over 10%. Yeah, a little over 10%. And here's why. If I take out my time, then I'm probably in that 3 to 4%.
Yeah.
But when I add in the amount of time that I dedicate to the podcast, to the speaking, to write, which all needs to be baked into, this is a big part that I hope a lot of you took away from Michael's presentation, Michael Kitz's presentation, the first Tuesday morning of retreat, when he talked about the lifetime revenue value and thus the net profit, the net operating income, the profit from a client. How much would you be willing to invest in a $250,000 lifetime relationship? Most advisors will only be in that 3 to 4%. But when you think of the average turnover of basically, you know, a 95% retention, which means your client base turns over once every 20 years, how much? So what is the lifetime value of a client over 20 years? Your profit, again, do all that math. Most of us should be willing to spend a decent amount of money to be able to pick up that lifetime cash flow. But most advisors miss that mark. Most advisors are too focused on picking up nickels and dimes, and they're stepping over dollar bills to do that. So understand, if we're going to ask that question of how much as a budget, as a percent of revenue, back to what we've talked about, right? If I have the choice of having more time or money, give me more time, because with more time, I can make more money. With more money, I can't make more time. So build your time into that equation about how much you're actually going to spend on your marketing budget.
Yeah. And that's another good example of how benchmarks are reasonable baselines. But one, you do want to have a sense of what your hard dollar costs are relative to the marketplace, because it tells you what the average firm is having to spend to generate the results that are also reported in those benchmarks. And then you want to know that you can beat those by a wide margin, Adam, even including his time, right? The average firm spends 30 or 35% on marketing. Adam is spending 10%, including those economics, right? So he's wildly more efficient because of some of the things that we'll talk about, right? Using that systematized model, right? Scaled marketing, and then using his specialized time, right? Him showing up, speaking, et cetera, right? In very leveraged ways to build brand credibility, right? That supports the whole brand, and that creates that flywheel momentum that ultimately gets him those clients. So he's got a multi-pronged approach around that audience.
Talking about the same thing to Angela's question in Slido about, can you have more than one marketing funnel? Yes, you can, as long as they're all driving towards the same outcome, right? So I write for Review of Metric Business. I have the podcast. I am active in an ODs on Finance Facebook community, which has 17,000 members. Podcast writing, speaking, and ODs on Finance. So I basically have four funnels, if you will. All four of them are driving primarily to the podcast. And then from the podcast, it's driving to the website to schedule a triage call. So you can have multiple different funnels as long as they're all coming down to that same common denominator. What is that action item? What is that CTA, that call to action that you're defining in your firm that is going to take someone from a cold lead into a warm prospect?
Yeah. And the lead gen channels will drive into your overall funnel, right? So that's where you can have blog as a lead gen, right? Driving into the funnel, your podcast in Adam's case, right? His speaking and writing, but they all ultimately drive to the website, which is where, right, that top of funnel awareness really starts to kick in. And then they go through the sales process, and then they, right, ultimately get to the bottom of the funnel sitting across from someone. Where it is not advantageous to have multiple funnels, to Adam's point, is when they're focused on different audiences. Unless you have established that you can do that and it's part of your growth strategy, right? So I would not have a funnel for little old ladies over here and a funnel for business owners over here, not because it can't be done, but it's typically done at scale. So when we do that, we tend to take shortcuts, like we slap some stuff together, we get it going, and then we go do the next one because there's an opportunity there. But like half of our opportunity isn't being mined over here because we don't know our pipeline. We're just doing it. And then we get the results. We're not systematically going through each level. Hey, why are we getting so many people to the website, but they're not right clicking the download? Like, what's going on that we need to fix the conversion right to the call to action? How do we convert from the call to act? So if you go through each step in the marketing funnel and you really nail it and you get the results that you want and you've got the machine, the flywheel moving, in my book, then and only then is it wise to start a second separate funnel if you have multi-rate audience marketing. If you're trying to do that, we would have a whole conversation about why I would recommend you not do that. Because if you just really double down on that funnel, you're going to grow faster is what it boils down to. But our brains tell us there's an opportunity over here and I know how to do it. So why don't I just cut and paste the system and I'll make more money? And you can, but all those conversations around focus and complexity. So I don't think that's where you were going with that, Angela, but I just want to make sure that no one interprets having multiple funnels as having multiple audience and multiple lead gen driving to those audiences. Again, if you feel like you're ready for that, let's absolutely have that conversation because there are cases where it can work, but you have to be typically larger, really process oriented, super disciplined, be really executing at this level across the board to pull that off. All right. Any other questions around pipeline and just really being mindful of that? And you notice Adam and I constantly go to the data. You've got to have the lead gen and the story, right? The qualitative part, the feeling part that people, right? Whether your story is functional or relational. But this part, this is a science. There are, right, companies out there, they just pick a product and they just lather, rinse, repeat the formula. And so it's, what's your marketing funnel? Adam, how long have you been honing yours? What, three or, I mean, you started before, but like really the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And now it's very predictable, right? Lead gen, we know what's coming in on a consistent basis, knows what that pipeline looks, knows what the data looks like at each step in that pipeline, right? And then knows with reasonable certainty what percentage of people, assets, and revenue are going to be projected based on that, right? And then based on that, it's pretty easy to drive a growth rate, market performance aside. But this is why marketing is so important. I was talking with another consultant this morning and we were talking about, like, there are firms out there that are suddenly like, oh, bear market, what do we do? Like, we thought we knew how to run a firm and they're like, suddenly we don't know how to run a firm. We know how to run a growing firm, but we don't know, right? So those are the things that you want to make sure of, that you want to build the marketing machine. One, in good times, it's great. Two, in down markets, it's a huge opportunity. This is when most of our clients grow even faster because there's so much disruption. People are looking, they're making changes, they're trying to solve problems. And so you want to make sure you've got a really well-oiled marketing funnel, because once people get into that system, this is where it starts to get much more automatic, right? They get on the assembly line and the pipeline just, right, flows them through the system, if you will. Adam, anything you want to add on data or pipelines?
I would say, I mean, that for, again, take this through your filter, but the three areas that are important for us is we look at the conversion of how many people are signing up for the newsletter. So we look at how many contacts that we're adding to our newsletter list. We're adding about 35. Ironically enough, it's been about one per day for a while now. We look at the open rate for our nurturing campaigns. We get a really good open rate on our emails. And then as far as the conversion of our prospects through a sales pipeline, we get all that out of Acuity. So we're able to see how many people book a triage call versus one-page plan versus follow-up versus onboarding. So those are the four. I did three. Those are the four, right? Those are the four different marks that we track from a conversion process in our sales. So it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to create this massive dashboard or anything like that. Just know what three or four areas you're going to measure success based off of what you're solving for.
Yep. I literally started doing this 25 years, 27, long time ago in a practice. I was like, how many people called in my success shifter? How many people did we talk to? How many people did we quote the fee to? How many said yes? How many said no? And how many said maybe? And I would total those up every month and then I would track it over the year. And that was like, that is the old school way of tracking your conversion. And it still doesn't take very long. But so the goal here is just to make sure you have some core metrics, simple is better, so that you're not trying to, you can't attack 9 metrics at once. It's, if you want to have a dashboard that you look at quarterly or semi-annually, If you're prepared for that level of data and you can use it, great. If you can't, stick to the 3 to 5 metrics that are really meaningful to you, because the ones that Adam and we've talked about, those are the ones that generally have the highest correlation to revenue coming in the door. Track and monitor. So we've talked about this, solo advisors, you've got your calendar, teams. This can be a little bit more complicated because you're managing firm level and advisor level, but it's all the same systems. It's how you're reporting and tracking up to that, if you will. So track monthly your one-page marketing plan. So for that could be your tracking with Success Shifter. You want to be looking at your budget, your new business tracker, right? The front end of your pipeline, and then to our point, selected KPIs. What are the data points? You might want to track things like average revenue per client to see if, right, the marketing and the pipeline is actually working at bringing in the larger clients, if that's one of your goals. So think through that. And then what's your marketing plan? We have sample marketing meeting agendas, right? Here's everything you could very likely want to talk about in your marketing meeting. You can absolutely take my permission to cut out half of that agenda. If you're smaller or newer, or it's just overwhelming, this does not need to be a 3.5 hour meeting with you. It's what is the key data? So we wanted to give you kind of the full outline, and you can pull out of that what's relevant. Your budget, which is part of the worksheets, your business tracker, your data. Again, we've given you a couple of different ways. We've got the new business summary. We've got the practice benchmark, some of those other tools that you can use if you want to take those advanced climbs, right? And if you're ready to go deeper with your tracking and monitoring, then definitely feel free to do that. If you haven't or you're not, simple is the ultimate sophistication. Start there. It's far more important to track 3 data points through that pipeline for 30, 60, 90 days, right, to get the data and get in the habit of tracking data than it is to tell yourself, I've got to do this big practice benchmark sheet, right, run it once and be like, wow, I don't even know what to do with all this data. That's not the goal, right? So again, use the tools in the way that really meet you where you are. And if you have questions, definitely let us know. We'll be happy to help you. All right, so we have, 18 minutes left my timer. You guys, I wasn't on time there for a little bit. This is how systems are so important. I went on a trip to the last retreat. I packed the timer, and guess what I didn't unpack? I got shipped back, all the stuff that I had to bring back got shipped back to me in a box. And without my timer, I was like, oh, have it. Sit down for call. Ooh, what time is it? And now I've just realized the timer is broken. Because it still says we have
5 minutes left.
we have five. Well, let's.
All right.
Let's go. So can we to Doug and Angela? Let's start with Doug.
Yeah.
Any follow-up questions, Doug? Did we answer sufficiently your question? If it doesn't work right away, how long do you stick with it? Anything that you would add to that, or the genesis for that question?
Well, I think the genesis for the question was largely around, with all of the marketing efforts, right, and all the different things to measure, right? Understanding what you're measuring, I think, answered a lot of the questions to how long you stick with it, because you have to stick with it long enough to figure out what you're measuring. But at what point do you say, and I go back to what you often see on a couple of the shows on like CNBC, at what point is it just a dog? And you get rid of it, and it's time to move on to something else, squash it like a bug, whatever analogy you want to use, and just say, well, that didn't work. How much time, effort, and energy do you put behind a marketing effort to go, this isn't yielding the results, regardless of what measurable I'm using, and say, done with this, or it needs to be adjusted,
changed,
or whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, it's that fine line, right? You don't want to quit. So I used to tell my kids all the time, never, ever, ever quit. Right? Because we've all heard that. Do you know that that's not the whole quote?
There's a hall of fame in every industry that's filled with quitters.
Literally. Well, the quote is never, ever, ever quit, except in the face of common sense or good judgment. That's the whole quote. So at one point I realized I kept telling my kids, like, we don't quit. And then I thought, God, someday they're going to be in a bad relationship or a bad job. And they're going to be like, Mom told me not to quit. I'm not sure that's what I want to teach them. So what we talked about is sometimes you push forward, sometimes you have to learn to pivot. And that's the fine line that we're trying to manage, is when is it an investment and when is it a dog? And so the number one, and I'm sure Adam has an opinion on this too, the thing we always look at is progress. One, are you making progress, right? We don't quit after 30 or 90 days on a podcast strategy. If we've been doing it 5 years, yeah, there's probably a reason we don't rock a podcast, because after three, we like, so that's why I say progress relative to the averages and your runway. So if everyone else is doing X and you're grossly underperforming X after a 3 year runway, or again, that's where it's the strategy, right? If it's COI marketing, it shouldn't take you 3 years to build a runway. It should take you a couple of years to build a pipeline where, like Tiffany, you just have people that just refer to you four or five times a year naturally. Because again, so that's where you want to look at what's the channel that you're really marketing into. But I would say one is, are you making reasonable progress? If you're not, then the question is, do I break it down? Do I get under the hood? Do I, you know, Ben and I had a call, what was it, a couple of years ago, Adam, around his podcast, and it was going great and he was getting loads of clients from it, but his conversion rate was like 42% or something. It was in the 40s. It was low. And so if he'd been like, hey, I've been doing this podcast for X long and my conversion rate is low, I'm not sure this is working, he would have ditched, right, an incredible revenue generator. It, like, it was good then, but it only got better. What we realized in looking at those data points that Adam mentioned was, where is it underperforming? So if you've been doing that all along, Doug, you shouldn't be in that situation. And it you should be seeing that progress. If you're not, that's where you have to start tweaking the formula, looking at your partners, or maybe podcasts aren't your jam. Maybe blogging, maybe you don't have the right content writer. If it really isn't working for you, that's when you make the decision to pivot to another strategy. And sometimes we'll do a bridge strategy where it's like, hey, I'm doing everything I can to get the podcast going. It only takes me, you know, 4 hours a month to record the episodes. Should I be doubling down on that? Or should I, like Adam did, go out and then and speak and write, do blogs? Are there other things that I can do to supplement that while the runway's kind of building, if you will? Does that help a little bit? Thank you. Adam, what about
you? I just go back to the fact that nobody, again, if someone truly believes that they're the first to do something, I'd love to hear about it, but nobody on this call is going to do something that hasn't already been done by some other advisor. There aren't, Seth Godin is famous for saying, there are no new ideas.
Yeah.
We're all doing something that's already been done before. So go. So find that benchmark, find that baseline. How long did it take me to get a prospect from podcasting? For people that are blogging, there's data out there that says that do this, get this. That's the benchmark that you can use to dictate when you have to throw in the towel, because it just might not be what's in alignment with your unique skill set. And then to Steph's point, maybe you don't ditch it, but you pivot. And you find, hey, I want to blog and that's where my people are, but I'm not the best writer and I'm not getting conversions. So could I hire someone to ghostwrite my blog? Here are my ideas. Let me do a stream of consciousness and have someone that is really good with words turn that into the written form.
I'll add to that. You guys will love this even more. I will go so far as to say that for the most part, there aren't even any dogs. There simply aren't. Yeah. So we did a marketing study before I retired. We did what was back then the first big marketing study. And we got to ask some really cool questions. And I asked people, what were the top five strategies that work for marketing? And then what were the top five that didn't? And do you know, want to know what was really interesting about those two lists? They were 80% the same. Seminars have been the best thing ever. Seminars suck, right? COIs are awesome. COIs suck, right? Referral programs are awesome. Referral programs suck. There are no dogs. I mean, literally our first year of Limitless, do you remember Kent? He had a $2 million practice doing seminars. Seminars. Everyone was like, oh my God. And he's like, crushing it with these seminars. What's everybody's problem with seminars? Right. So he just developed a forte. He got it. He was a great speaker. He cracked the formula, right? Going through the pipeline, he cracked the code. So Doug, I would add, there aren't even any dogs. It's, is it going to work for me? And this is where I think you can eliminate a lot of that on the front end. If you hate public speaking, like it makes you, don't go do it. or start by taking a Toastmasters class and see if you can survive that, right, for 6 months before you go do your first public speaking engagement. If you hate writing, but you think a blog is the best way, right, to Adam's point, go find a content writer, right? So success leaves clues. There are models for how to make any marketing channel and strategy work great. It has to fit you and your clients. We have advisors that hate the, you know, the smart assets and the white coats, and we have advisors that are crushing it with them. It's based on them, their client type, the client size, the fees, the kind of work that they do. And so that's where you really want to choose the channels and the strategies that feel like they fit you. And then that's not to mean don't get uncomfortable, by the way. It doesn't mean that, right, if you're interested in a podcast and you don't think you have the best radio voice, you don't do it. It means that you get clear that you're comfortable being uncomfortable and you do it anyway until it's right. Adam doesn't think about being on podcasts anymore. When we recorded our first one, I was like, oh, wait, I got to do the intro again. And he was like, oh, and I was like, I'm used to being the guest. I'm not used to being this. Like, my brain is just like, took me about 3 tries and then, okay, away we go. So it's really building the habits in the areas, right? Can you consistently write? If you can't, can someone do it for you? Can you consistently speak? Right? What are the things that are going to work for you is where I would typically start with marketing. And then, right, you can expand into other areas as they start to really work for you. Do we have, let's see, any more? Do we get to all the questions?
There's we talked about Angela's. Danny's got one more in there that you can answer. I need to hop to another call here. So I appreciate everybody. And enjoy the week. And we'll talk to y'all soon. I'll be on Tribe. So tag me there and we'll go from there.
All right, Adam, thank you so much. Let's see, we talked about time, Angela. Danny, do you want to talk about calling clients? You there still, or did Danny drop off? I don't see Danny, so I will. He was asking about calling on clients of his prior firm because they didn't have a niche, and I think his time had run out. So I will follow up with him on Tribe on that. Right. Do you guys, what other questions do you have? I know we're 3-4 minutes over. I had to adjust my clock. Right.
And Angela and Paul, did your questions get answered about the percentage of time?
And yes, it did. Yeah, that answered my question.
Yeah, I was trying to be so on time today, but when I restarted the PowerPoint, it restarted the clock. So I thought I had 5 more minutes of my timer didn't work. But got to all the questions, which is great. All right, was this call helpful to you guys today in terms of just getting clear on marketing plan and implementation? It's not the sexiest topic, but as we start to break it down, do you start to understand how important it is? If you want to build a superhighway, those support structures really need to be there. If even one of them is missing, what is the structural integrity of that superhighway? If a couple of them are missing, right, it's weak. And so that's where we want to look at what's the clarity, transparency, and accountability. What's the, all the, those 9 things that we talked through are your support systems that will create a smooth runway so that as you have those ideas and you show up using your energy to create those revenue producing opportunities, you're really harnessing it to the maximum and you're spending as little time as possible, right, on all the tension and the stress points. That's what those supports are there to create, is a smoother runway between you and growth. So hopefully our call today helps you to do that. And as always, as you have questions, reach out to us on Tribe Coaching Inbox, and we'll be happy to support you.